Good morning. Welcome to the Publishing Business Virtual Conference and Expo. I'm Noel Skavinsky, Editorial Director of Book Business Magazine, and I'm pleased to welcome you to the first live session of the day, Best Practices in eBook Metadata. You'll be hearing in-depth case studies and best practices from leading executives on how they're managing eBook metadata. And just before we get started, I have a couple things I wanted to go over. I wanted to make sure you all got the instructions that this is a black tie event, so I hope you're all in your black tie attire. And how this works is you can't see us, but we can see you, so we'll know if you're not dressed for the occasion. I'm kidding. I don't know how many people were covering their little cameras on their computer, but anyway. Before we get started, I just wanted to point out a few technical tips on how you can make the most of today's webinar. If you have any technical difficulties, you can click on the help widget at the bottom of the console that's marked with a question mark, or you can submit a question via the Q&A box. You can also use the Q&A box to submit your questions to the panelists today, and we will be saving time at the end to address select questions, but you can submit your questions at any time during the event. Make sure you turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can utilize all the widgets and the bells and whistles on the console. And speaking of bells and whistles, if you click on the Tips for Attendees widget along the bottom, you can learn what all of the widgets on the console do and how you can customize your experience today. And you can tweet right from the console. And finally, if you have to leave this session at any time or want to view it again later, you can access the entire presentation from the auditorium in the Publishing Business Virtual On-Demand Environment, which will be open for 3 months beginning Monday, October 31st. So without further ado, I want to introduce our session moderator, who we're thrilled to have here today, Patricia Payton, Senior Director of Publisher Relations and Content Development at Bowker. Patricia is responsible for communicating metadata requirements and best practices to publishers of all sizes. She has experience with retail bookstores as well as international markets, and she holds a master's degree in library information science, specializing in digital libraries as well as an MBA. And she actively contributes to BISG, the Book Industry Study Group, and other industry committees. And you can find her on Twitter at Discover Bowker. So if you'll please join me welcoming Patricia Payton.
Thanks, Noelle. Welcome to the Best Practices in eBook Metadata panel. Presenting in this session will be three individuals who really know their eBook metadata business. Bob, Rosemary, and Kathy all truly care about the metadata they are creating and distributing, and they actively look to improve their processes. First, let's look at an overview of each of their companies and how they are handling metadata. Then each presenter will speak, and we will address questions at the very end of the panel. The publishers represented today include Johns Hopkins University Press with 1,041 eBooks, Amacom, a specialist publisher, with 1,100 eBooks, and HarperCollins with 8,800 eBooks. As you can see on the screen, the two smaller publishers produce both PDF and EPUB files, assigning each book a single ISBN. HarperCollins produces EPUB files and is starting to into enhanced EPUBs, and they're creating or using a single ISBN per format of the book. Two of our publishers distribute their metadata from internal systems, and Amacom has their repository distribute the metadata for them. All three parties produce their metadata in Onyx, while two also send Excel format to the customers that are needing that format. Everyone here is creating a separate metadata record for eBooks, as opposed to using a print metadata record and just stating the ISBN for the eBook in that print record. They're creating a whole eBook metadata record for the eBook itself. They also have publication dates, cover images, and descriptions for their metadata. However, only two of our participants are able to put author biographies in their Onyx feeds today with that eBook metadata. So I listed these comparisons here so that you'll have an idea of the various practices happening in the industry. And I want to point out that these are some of the fundamental questions that you want to ask yourself and address internally when you're setting up your ebook metadata strategy. So now I'd like to introduce our first speaker. Bob Estee is Senior Program Analyst at the Johns Hopkins University Press. After earning his PhD in 1980, he taught ballroom dancing at an Arthur Murray studio and worked as a simultaneous interpreter for the U.S. State Department before coming to the Johns Hopkins Press in 1988. He is chief developer of the AllBooks database, which is an award-winning title management system currently under license to a variety of small and large publishing firms. Bob is a frequent presenter at conferences and has worked as a consultant for more than a dozen scholarly and professional presses. Bob?
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here this morning, and I am, as said, Bob Estee from the Johns Hopkins University Press, and I have a confession to make right up front here, and it is that I am hooked on Onyx. And I'd like to tell you a little bit this morning about how you can create your own Onyx files for your ebook metadata in just five easy steps. If you haven't tried this before, it's worth a try. Onyx, of course, stands for Online Information Exchange. If you don't know much about it, here's the who, what, when, where, why, and how. It was created back in 2000, and it is basically an XML-based system for communicating hundreds of bits of data about your books and ebooks to all the people that need to know about it, going from publishers to vendors. And it has evolved over the years, but right now it is a standard that is, of course, widely used. Well, before we can start talking about Onyx at all, we have to understand that you have to know XML, because that is the language in which Onyx is written. XML stands for Extensible Markup Language. Many of you listening this morning have heard of it. Many of you even know how to use it. You could probably write it in your sleep, and that's why the first thing we're going to do this morning is have a pop quiz. So take out your pencil. I can't see you, but I know you should do that. Take out your pencil and see if you can answer this question, okay? Given the following information, what would an XML file look like for Moby Dick, Herman Melville, Richard Bentley, 1995? You have 5 seconds. You should have done something like this, right? We're saying the title is Moby Dick, the author is Herman Melville, the publisher is Richard Bentley, the price is 1995. You'll see that XML works by having a series of start and stop tags. So we see that the title starts with Moby Dick, and it ends right there, and the author comes next. Now, this is exactly like what they used to tell you in public speaking class or writing class. You're supposed to tell them what you're going to say, say it, and tell them what you said. So I'm going to tell you the title, Moby Dick. I just told you the title. I'm going to tell you the author, Herman Melville. I just told you the author. I'm going to tell you the publisher, and so forth. Now, you may think that this is very tedious and boring, but believe me, computers love this. They wish that we would talk to them like this all the time. And you can get more sophisticated than this if you want, simply by adding a little bit of information and saying, I'm going to tell you the book. And then you can have more than one book in your file. Slowly we're building up here to an XML file that's going to give you all your metadata. Suppose you need to say that there's a U.S. price and a U.K. price. You can see here that within price I say, I'm going to tell you the price. I'm going to tell you the U.S. price, 1995. Now, it's very important, of course, you know this, that you have to have a stop tag for every start tag or your XML is not well formed. If you were to say title Moby Dick and then never have that slash title at the end, eventually the system would say to you, will you stop talking about the title? You've been going on for hours. And you thought you stopped, but you didn't because the stop tag wasn't there. So that is actually very essential. Now, the beauty of XML is, and this was, I think, said by the father of XML, John Bosak, he said that XML is wonderful because it's like chess in that a list of relatively simple rules that can be learned by most people very quickly can result in a structure and relationships of astonishing complexity. And that's why I have to confess that that John Bosak is my personal hero, the father of XML, and here he is. Not only is he my hero, but I love XML so much that I insist that anyone communicating with me in writing send me the information in well-formed XML. So my wife knows better than to send me to the grocery store without giving me an XML-formatted grocery list. And here's an example of that. You can see what we're getting this weekend. We're getting some pomegranates. We're getting a couple of carrots, a pound of carrots. And for some reason, a gross of crunchy bars. I think there's a diet in the works here somewhere. In any event, once you've got XML down, the second most and perhaps the most important takeaway this morning is to prepare your data. The data that you're drawing on to prepare your ebook metadata or your print book metadata has to be clean. It has to be proper. And the first way you can do that and help ensure that is to foster a culture at your press or at your organization of database responsibility, at which everyone understands that the data they're entering matters a lot, because you might enter it today and tomorrow it could be on the internet, could be on your website, could be on Amazon. So you want to make sure that you get to what I call the Goldilocks access zone. And that is the area where your access privileges for people are not too strict and not too easy. Because if everybody can do anything, your data is going to be a mess. And if nobody can do anything, your data is also going to be a mess. So we want to have that middle ground. I think one reason why the TSA no-fly list is the problem that it is that it's so secret. People can't see it. It never gets corrected. So at Johns Hopkins, what we try to do is to control our data by having as many people as possible see it, even if they're not working on that area, but as the smallest number of people actually editing or administering it. And that way, data stays clean. But it's not enough if you're controlling your data if you're not also able to control yourself. So that if you've got the ability to override things in your database that's going to put something bad in there just because you can, don't let yourself do it. Impose restrictions on yourself as well as on others. Because remember, nobody is above the law, not even database administrators. Now, the more you use your metadata in different places, the cleaner it's going to get. So if you use the same data that you're sending out in your Onyx files on your website, it's going to get proofread a whole lot, because everybody here that works for a publisher knows who your best proofreaders are, right? At night while you're sleeping, there is a cadre of very well-informed professionals who are combing the internet, Googling their names, and checking to make sure everything about them is correct. Those, of course, are your authors. And the authors will let you know anytime they find anything incorrect on your website about their book. If your author is on sabbatical, don't worry, because the role is taken over by their mothers. So that's a wonderful thing. Use your data wherever you can, because the more you use it, the richer it gets. All your different departments are going to be wanting to contribute to the accumulation and correction of your data. And as you can see here, all sorts of stuff get put in through various streams until finally you've got something that is fit for displaying and sending out to the world. You may have heard the term normalization or data normalization. If you don't know what that means, it means what is shown here in this illustration. If a student gets an F on a history test, that F is an attribute of the test. It gets written on the test and not on the student's shirt, because tomorrow there might be another test and that would have a different grade. So too with your data about your authors and your books and so forth. You may have a database or a table in your database that contains information about people, and those people, of course, might each have a social security number. That would be an attribute of the person. But if you want to say this person is an author or an editor or a translator, that doesn't belong in that table, but rather in the table that describes the role of that person in a given book. A slogan we use at Johns Hopkins is adapt to it or map to it. So we got our own rules for describing things. We might say that books about landscape history are G007 in our system, but nobody outside of here knows what that means. So we've got a conversion table that automatically translates that into Onyx, BISAC codes, and BIC codes for the UK folks without anyone having to translate that themselves. Now, this can be overridden, but it works very well. The same thing goes for things like the binding. We might call it an e-book, but as far as Onyx is concerned, it is a DG for a digital publication, and so any ebook in our system gets mapped to that. The same goes for authors, editors, forward by, or we can just adapt to it. So we use the Onyx descriptions for different types of descriptive copy in our system, so it's all ready to go. The main description is simply called 01, the main description. We're almost ready to create our file, but unfortunately, we first have to read the 176-page Onyx product record format document. Now, that is a somewhat tedious undertaking because it's rather long and very detailed. And you'll see here an example of release 2.1, revision 03, and you're probably thinking right now, wait a minute, haven't I heard somewhere that we're about to have release 3.0? What happened to that? Well, last summer, Johns Hopkins sent a query out to our major vendors saying, what about version 3.0? Are you using that yet for Onyx? And here's a sample of the replies we got. The most common one was no. Not at the moment. Nobody's offering any. We're working on it late this year. It's on our radar. And my personal favorite, yes, in theory, but you would be the first. So we're not using Onyx 3.0 yet. We're still using 2.1. And as that goes out, we create an Onyx file here in the house. One of the questions that comes up is, should you do this yourself or not? We'll talk about that in a little while. But here's how we do it. You can start very simple. Here's the world's shortest valid Onyx file. I'm going to tell you the Onyx message. I'm going to tell you the header. I'm going to tell you the publisher, the Johns Hopkins University Press. And on it goes. If we build this out slowly, little by little, you'll see it gets bigger and bigger, and we get more and more information in it. And now if we have to send things out to different ebook vendors like Google and Amazon and so forth, we do have to lower our so-called standards a little bit, meaning that this isn't necessarily going to be a one-size-fits-all file. So we've got slightly different versions for the different ebook vendors. And it's very simple because, look, if Kindle calls something an 031, Google calls it an 032, we can deal with that. And we even add the little tag here that reminds us, the optional tag that says this is a Kindle, this is a Google edition, and so forth and so on. Okay? Finally, you have to validate your file if you've created this thing. And this is not the easiest part of the whole task because to do this, you have to purchase an XML parser. Examples are shown here on the screen. They'll cost a few hundred dollars depending on what you get, but you have to have one. You can't send an Onyx file out that hasn't been validated, that is to say, hasn't been checked, not only to make sure that all the tags start and stop properly, but to make sure that it's following the rules of the Onyx specification. And believe me, if you've ever tried this and failed, you know how satisfying it is when it finally works. It can be frustrating because XML validation software is still maturing. At present, I like to say it's got the mind of a 13-year-old. The reason I say that is that because it will always complain, it'll never tell you what's really wrong. So you'll get a message from your software that says something like, tag D104 was unexpected in line 23.423. And if you ask, well, what were you expecting? It'll say, I don't know. And if you say, were you expecting maybe D105? It'll say, no, not really. Until finally you realize that the problem was not in that line at all, but several lines before it. In fact, once you change the line above it, then it's expecting the one that came next. So it can be a little bit difficult, and you have to be patient. Software is picky. Some vendors have special needs, and we talked about the fact that some of your ebook vendors are going to require you to have a slightly different file, but that's okay. Your data is changing all the time. There's always errors introduced, and it can be very frustrating. So finally, I'd like to recommend a recommended reading published by our friends at Parenting Press in the Dealing with Your Feelings series, I'm Frustrated. And if you can cope with your frustration, you'll have the satisfaction of creating your own Onyx file, sending your ebook metadata out, having it received, and having it work. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Bob. That was great. I think that was both entertaining and educational for everyone. I'm going to now turn it over to Rosemary Carlo. She's the Vice President of Marketing for Amacom Books, but this really means she's a jack of all trades. Along with two colleagues at Amacom, she has managed their growing presence in the ebook world for over 10 years, starting back in the days when the most common question was, do we have files? And the answer was often no. Most days, the job seems like project management, or is it firefighting? Authors' questions, metadata questions, EDI questions come her way. Computers seem to talk to each other more than humans some days. She reads a lot of books, but has to confess that she doesn't buy many. She actually frequents her public library and keeps her reading list on Goodreads.com. I'll turn it over to you, Rosemary.
Good morning, folks. My perspective on this is very different from Bob's because, as Pat said, I'm actually in marketing. So I'm really happy to have somebody else really dealing with my Onyx feeds. although that does mean that I know more about Onyx than I ever thought possible. In past overview, it noted that we have a really large number of e-books or e-book ISBNs, but that's because we started with NetLibrary way before 2000 when a lot of our books were scanned and assigned ISBNs. We actually only do 60 or 70 new titles a year, so we're a really small shop, and handling metadata for those internally to all the people we distribute to would really be quite a task, because we distribute our ebooks to all of the majors except for Apple and then a number of other library kind of database places. So dealing with, as Bob pointed out, the different requirements of different vendors internally would be a real challenge. So in terms of ebook metadata, it's always been a challenge. When we started doing ebooks, we weren't even sending Onyx feeds yet for our print books. We didn't really have title management software in 2007, and in 2007, 2008, we started sending print Onyx feeds. And at that time, we were distributing ebooks. Of course, that was before the Kindle and before the Nook, so we weren't distributing ebooks to nearly as many people as we were back then. Really what turned things around was in 2008 we began using CodeMantra as our digital ad set distributor, and that means that they handle our Onyx feeds. Our title management system is able to produce spreadsheets for us that give us the print metadata details, and then we can add the ebook information that we need to, in turn giving it over to CodeMantra, and they in turn can send out the Onyx feeds. So we're not directly doing Onyx feeds. That means our information for Onyx feeds is sadly not right now for ebooks as robust as it is for print books. We're not distributing jacket copy, as Pat noted in her original slide. We're not distributing any author bios. We don't distribute table of contents. So this is our challenge for 2012. It's also been very difficult in our workflow, and this is not really a comment on our digital asset distributor, to update our Onyx feed data for ebooks. We provide our basic Onyx feed data for ebooks to our digital asset distributor twice a year, which has really been an internal decision. If we did it monthly, that would probably provide us the opportunity to give much more detailed data, and that would help us in terms of sales. So that's really one of our goals. We also have found that unlike print Onyx feeds, which often update weekly, most of our ebooks Onyx feeds are sent out once to a distributor, and there's not really a process to send out an Onyx feed where we've changed a price or send out an Onyx feed letting a distributor know that we've declared an ebook out of print. We hate to declare an ebook out of print, of course, because there's really no reason to declare an ebook out of print, but sometimes authors want their rights back, sadly. So I come at this from a marketing perspective, and the reason to get all your metadata out there is you really want people to discover your books, and having the most robust metadata possible is going to make more people discover your books. So I really love this Nielsen quote. Of the 85,000 top-selling titles in Nielsen, the ones with complete data records sold 70% more copies on average than the ones with incomplete metadata. And I remind my colleagues who are inputting various parts of metadata into our system of these statistics on a really regular basis, because as Bob pointed out, you really need quality, consistency, and it gets out there in the food chain and all the authors and their mothers see it. So without good metadata, someone looking for your book is lost in a corn maze, and if you supply good metadata, they're going to find the center of the corn maze, then hopefully order your book. Now, this is an example of our website, and the good thing about our website is that unlike our Onyx feeds, our website is updated nightly with data feeds from our product information database. So our website includes all the metadata, basic print book metadata, and we update it regularly with reviews and quotes and excerpts and cover copies. So the nearer a book gets to publication, the more robust our website is. So clearly our goal for ebooks is to move towards supplying just as robust ebook metadata to all of our trading partners as we currently have on our own website. This is really a challenge, and it's also critical because, as I'm sure many of you, or those of you at least in the marketing side have heard, right now a lot of customers are finding books because they're finding the print book, and then they're deciding what format they're going to buy it, or they're finding the book in the bookstore. But we really need to move to a world where metadata, and hopefully maybe Onyx 3.0, Bob would know, actually includes search engine optimization keywords, will really help people find ebooks online. Then there's the issue of what you send in your Onyx feed and what your final trading partners display. The best ebook vendors that we work with display many of the fields that we supply them, and then the ones that are selling P&E are able to match up our print books and our ebooks so that someone can see really robust metadata and decide what format to buy. The people who are selling ebooks only oftentimes have very basic metadata for our titles, and it doesn't drive as many sales. And more information equals more sales. That's really my mantra. So our Onyx feeds are initially tied to our early print book metadata, and this has really been a workflow challenge. We have initial information entered by editorial, we have information entered by production, and then we have information entered by our marketing staff. And the marketing staff tries to check all the fields, but as Bob's pointed out, it's really a lot of information, and errors do get out there, and quality, quality, quality is the mantra. So as much as we hate getting those emails from authors, we're really glad when people point out errors and we can fix them. The sites with the best metadata have the best sales, and you know who they are. I'm not going to do an ad here. So the most challenging data fields in ebook metadata for us really right now are geographical rights restrictions. We're lucky in that, unlike many publishers, we usually have worldwide rights to our titles, but this isn't always the case. And as ebooks are sold worldwide, providing geographical rights restrictions is really key and something that's not, at least in our world, so important for our print books. The other challenge, which has really started, is providing international pricing. We started just this year, 2010, providing prices for Canada and the UK, since we have vendors selling our ebooks in those markets. And as many people know, Google and Amazon, in particular, are starting to sell off many other sites in the world. So pricing your books internationally is going to be an ongoing challenge. We want to try to add reviews and other post-publication information to our ebook metadata, and one of our challenges for 2012 is really changing our workflow to allow this to happen. That's really my recap.
Thanks, Rosemary. I appreciate you being honest about your ebook challenges, and I think what you've added to the conversation on top of what Bob had already supplied about metadata and the fields of metadata is now you've added in which ones are most important to you and you're going to work on in 2012 and beyond to improve your ebook metadata. Next, I'd like to introduce Kathy Smith. She's the Senior Vice President of Sales Administration and Operations at HarperCollins Publishers, and she's been with the company for the last 14 years. Prior to that, she worked at Simon & Schuster for 8 years, including stints as Associate Director of Field Sales and sales rep. She's been a book buyer for 2 independent bookstore chains, and started her career working at B. Dalton bookstores because they gave employee discounts on books. Kathy?
Good morning. My name is Kathy Smith, and I'm in charge of sales operations and administration at HarperCollins. For my portion of the presentation, I'm going to go off into a little bit of a different direction and talk about ebook originals. Or, as I like to think of it, trying to put a square peg in a round hole. You may be wondering why someone from sales is talking about metadata issues. Well, the people who work with the accounts to merchandise our books are part of the sales department here. So when we run into problems getting our titles on sites, the problems have a way of ending up on my desk. I won't say ebook originals are all problems. But I would say that they're challenges. So what is an ebook original? It's basically an ebook that does not have an associated print edition. Up until recently, most digital content has been based on content that's been printed. Even the new enhanced ebooks, fixed format ebooks, audio sync to text ebooks, and even apps are all built from a print product. So we're starting to do more and different kinds of these originals. The different types of originals really fall into three categories. Promotional ebooks are typically sample chapters or teasers. These are often made available for a short period of time, usually at no cost, to promote a new title coming from an author. In the print world, these are usually found at the end of an author's previous book. We also started two ebook original programs. Our Avon imprint is now producing a line of original romances called Avon Impulse. These are mostly new authors who would probably not be published in mass market. We can instead publish them as ebook originals in the hopes of getting new readers and building some of these authors into print authors. Our conservative political imprint called Broadside is also doing a line of ebook originals. These are mostly short essays or reaction pieces we can get to market quickly in response to current events. Finally, we have repurposed material. Here we've taken short story collections and pulled a few of the stories into separate products. We can price these really low and, again, hopefully get readers hooked enough to purchase the entire collection. So how do we fit these into our publishing program? As mentioned already in this session, the metadata for ebooks is usually tied to the metadata of the print books. Except for how you need to customize the delivery of the metadata to specific customers, the creation of the metadata goes hand in hand. Typically, this is about 10 to 14 months prior to the pub date. The manuscript comes in so the description can be written and the cover can start to be produced. The author Q&A comes in so you can write the author bio. The price of the book is determined once you know how many pages the book is. The price of the ebook is then determined based on the price of the print book. Everything goes hand in hand. So what happens to this critical path when you have no print book? The critical path, basically as we know it, is shattered into a million pieces. And why is that? Now we're looking at a schedule of 5, 6, or sometimes even 1 month prior to pub date. That means all of these originals are considered crashes. Authors, agents, and even editors think sometimes because it's digital, it can happen with the click of a mouse. Well, here's the reality. With the exception of repurposed material, copy editing needs to be crashed. We often can't supply descriptions early enough to get pre-orders because the manuscripts aren't in yet. Even once we have a description, the system that we currently have in-house for including it in Onyx is based on it being part of flap copy or cover copy. For ebook originals, we have neither of these. Who's going to create the cover? Our art departments are scrambling as it is to get the print covers made. Now we often have to hire freelancers to do these covers. And an interesting twist in this digital world, sometimes we're still routing the paper contracts with the authors and have to delay a pub date until everything is actually signed. We've also had to work with many of our accounts to change their systems, and this is not an easy task. Since we follow the agency pricing model, many of the pricing tiers are based on an associated print book. No associated print book often equals confusion. So I'll end my portion of the presentation by saying we haven't figured out how to solve all of these problems yet. I wanted to outline some of the new challenges since I see many of us going down this road, and you may want to start thinking about how you can work them into your publishing program. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy. I appreciate that information on ebook originals and the process and how it is different than print book. I wanted to open up some questions. So if the audience wants to send in any questions for Q&A, we'll be happy to take those. I've also created some questions because I wanted to kind of go around robin and talk to the speakers about a couple of topics while we're waiting for your questions to come in. So first off, why don't we go Bob, Rosemary, Kathy again. How have you each handled the metadata for digital versions of backlist titles or out-of-print titles? Has the process been different than for new titles?
I would have to – yeah, this is Bob. I would say that the process has really not been different simply because we've got the metadata already for the print version of those titles, and it continues to be updated as, you know, if new reviews are added or something like that. So when the time comes to publish a book in e-format that was originally published 10 or even 20 years ago, we've got the information on hand, and we're just plugging in the fact that this is a Kindle or this is a Google edition or whatever else it is. So to that extent, in a way, I would say almost that publishing is getting metadata together for backlist books is easier than the frontlist books.
This is Rosemary. Since we didn't have a title management system before 2007, while we have the basic metadata, title, author, ISBN, price information, and depending on the date of the book, descriptive copy for our backlist, which is not nearly as deep as Bob's. When we get a request for a backlist title, we do need to go into our current title management system, update the print book metadata, and then use that to create more robust ebook metadata, which we would then send to our digital asset distributor. That's kind of a win-win, assuming the print book is still in print, because then we'll end up with both more robust print book metadata as well as a distributed ebook. So that's pretty much worked okay. Usually if a book is out of print, oftentimes the rights are reverted and we would not release it as an ebook.
And this is Kathy. We pretty much have the same situation as Bob outlined. We do have all of our metadata for our titles, all of our backlist titles already. And so we're able to very easily just pull that, make any additions that we need to for the digital versions and get it out. Also, what Rosemary just said about the out-of-print titles is the same for us, too. We generally only do out-of-print when something has reverted. The one thing that we are doing with backlist is we are starting to look at some of the enhanced formats. And so the basic metadata, though, is still going to be the same even for those.
Thank you, everyone. Let me do one more round robin, and then we've got quite a few questions coming in, and we'll go to what people are asking. Do you each have to customize your metadata feeds for individual ebook retailers or library conversion houses? If so, how have you handled those variances in feeds? Bob?
Yes, we do, and we try to do it as little as possible. As I indicated in the slideshow, for example, we do have to customize things for, you know, if we're describing a Kindle or some other kind of ebook. And that's really no different from some of the minor tweaks we've had to do for other vendors receiving print feeds that sometimes they just insist and we just cave in. So to the extent that it's necessary, we simply do it.
This is Rosemary. As Bob notes, in our print feeds, sometimes we do have to create custom Onyx feeds for different vendors. On the ebook side, since we're working with Code Mantra as our digital asset distributor, what they've tried to do is create a what I'll call a metadata template, which we actually provide to them in Excel, which includes all the possible information that the Onyx partners that they're in turn sending our information to will need. So this, of course, means that as the distributors grow and as ebooks become more worldwide, that the number of seals that really are necessary has, in fact, increased. As I mentioned before, it includes geographical rights and international pricing. Sometimes it includes stuff about whether we'll allow chapters to be used in a preview. So in a way, it's a little bit more complex than our standard print book metadata. But we do it once, and then they customize it on the Onyx end.
And this is Kathy. We absolutely have to customize our Onyx feeds based on the customer and what that customer is asking us for. We have recently been doing a lot of the international pricing, and that's resulted in the need to do a lot of testing with each customer. I believe someone from our IT group is in this session, and she's been having to stay up late many, many nights trying to get all these things tested and working. And there's even some people who we still have to supply Excel spreadsheets to because they're not quite ready to rely solely on Onyx.
Thanks, everyone. Okay, now looking at some of the questions that have come in, let's start with a question for Rosemary. It says, the Nielsen statistic that you gave is shocking. Do you have any concurring data from your company? And then maybe Bob and Kathy can say if they have any data from their company as well.
I don't really have any concurrent data from my company because we actually don't sell, for example, off of our own website. I would say that we can tell from the print world that the titles for which we provide more robust information certainly sell better, but of course those are often titles that are getting more reviews, have more active authors, so it's not entirely fair to make that a metadata correlation. I have in other BISG meetings seen similar statistics cited by people at, I think, Barnes & Noble and or Baker & Taylor. So perhaps Noelle or Pat can also speak to this.
Well, this is Bob. I would say I would doubt that statistic because, you know, as is obvious, I think the books that tend to get more metadata are the newer ones and so forth. And so we could probably put a whole lot of metadata into a book that was published 10 years ago and is selling 10 copies a year, and it wouldn't budge. So I think in a way it's a correlation that doesn't necessarily imply causation.
Kathy, your thoughts?
I agree. I don't believe that we have done any study looking at this. I certainly know that every 6 months we include more metadata in our Onyx. So, and you're also looking at increasing ebook sales. You know, for any number of other reasons. In addition to the increased metadata. So I think that would be a little hard to actually say there's a cause and effect there.
This is Noelle. I just wanted to interject, too. I have not seen that figure before, but I think what it's suggesting anyway is that what the metadata is really aiming to do is enable people to more easily find your books and to get your books out there and have the data that's required in order to help sales along. But it's sort of the same thing as having it on the bookshelf in a bookstore. I would think that just because your book is in the front doesn't mean that it's necessarily going to increase sales. It's just sort of facilitating the ability to, whereas there might be a correlation between, hindering some sales if you're not in the front of the bookstore, you're not even in the bookstore, as well as if you don't have the metadata to support the book that you need. I don't know if you'd all agree with that.
I agree with that, Noelle. I think I can add that We have a service where we supply cover images to library catalogs, and all the time we get requests for cover images for books that are out of print or books that were published several years ago. So people still want the look and feel of the book in hand experience in the digital world, whether that book is a new release or not. So whether it promotes better sales of backlist, I think it definitely helps the discoverability of the backlist, and that's what we're going for to lead to sales in this digital world. So another question that has come in for Bob, somebody would like to see the slide detailing out Onyx data again. So if you want to maybe go back, this will be a test of all of our ability to use the presentation manager. Bob, if you want to find that slide and put it up, and while we're doing that, I'll go ahead and ask Kathy a question.
Okay. Why are you can ahead. Someone clarify what slide that is?
I think it's the one where you have the XML string and how an XML string looks with the Moby Dick, if you want to put that up.
Oh, all right. Well, that,
okay.
Yeah,
and then,
I'll do that.
And then maybe Wendy can write in again if that's not the slide that she would like to see. And for Kathy, why are you trying to route ebook readers to paper rather than the other way around?
I don't think it's one or the other. As far as we're concerned, we're trying to sell as many books in as many formats as possible. So if it makes sense to have an ebook original and we think that we can get it into print book markets, we're certainly going to go that way, just like we've been taking our print books and turning them into ebooks. So I don't think it's a one or the other. I think you're probably talking about some of the Avon Impulse titles and the romance authors. If we can build them and get more people to see the title, whether it's online or in a bookstore or a supermarket, that's what we're trying to do.
Thanks, Kathy. There's two more questions about your ebook original, so I'll give those while we're on the topic. How do you go about pricing an original ebook?
We do it almost in the same way we would do a print book. One of the factors is what's the category. Nonfiction seems to be able to support a little higher price than fiction. We also look and see how long the file is. We can't base it on the size of a print book, finished book, but we still know an equivalent number of pages, and we price to that. And then probably the other thing that we do is to see if we have any marketing opportunities. Some of these originals, we've been able to work with an account or two or three to do some sort of a group promotion and that sort of thing. And sometimes the price will be determined based on a marketing opportunity.
Kathy, thank you. There's also a related question that says, is the pricing of the original affected by the intended distribution channel, i.e. a training manual in the get-rich-quick market to be sold to attendees of seminars?
Sometimes something like that would we have been doing some work with some customers, some businesses and things like that to do almost the equivalent of a sort of a one-off proprietary product that they use for training and that sort of thing. It wouldn't necessarily be made available to everyone. So I hope that helps. I hope that answers the question. I'm not quite sure.
Okay. Thank you, Kathy. And also, just so attendees know, there is a session after this with some pricing strategies in it, so maybe you can get more tips there. There was one more question for you, Kathy, on ebook originals. Does the marketing for ebook originals suffer in comparison to print books?
you know, we haven't done enough of them to really know. We have gotten some interest in our Avon Impulse, the romance line, because it is a line and we can market a group of titles. This is still very new to us too. So, you know, certainly with a new title, with a print book, you have more opportunities for marketing and publicity. And so, you know, that has a tendency to translate into the digital world as well. So I think I'd have to say that we haven't experienced any problems yet, but we also haven't done enough of these to have a real good feel.
Great. Thank you. Here's a question for Rosemary and Bob. With ebook metadata, how have you gotten around the Onyx requirement that there be a separate ISBN for each format, EPUB, MOBI, et cetera? Bob, do you want to start?
This is Rosemary. I think that's really a recommendation more than anything else. Pat might be able to, well, you might be able to speak to that. I think it's something that BISG and or Bowker had suggested, but we haven't really found it necessary, and we certainly, it would make my head spin to explode our process to actually assign an EISBN to every format we were doing. I really care what sales vendor is selling my book, and I get reports that tell me what books have sold and where they've sold, and that's really more important to me than knowing what format has sold.
This is Kathy. I'll chime in quickly on this one as well. We're actually in the process of trying to retire those legacy format ISBNs to try to clean up our systems. So we're, since I think about a year ago, only doing EPUB formats now, and we're trying to work with our customers to translate all the old versions into the EPUBs.
Thanks. To Rosemary's comment, yes, BISG has been working on a best practices for ebook identification document that I believe is in internal review from membership right now, and that will be published later this year. And what it basically does is give working examples of when to assign an ISBN to another version. And one of the things it outlines and reinforces is the International ISBN Agency policy that somebody in the supply channel can then assign another ISBN to the work should they need it for separate identification. So if the publisher chooses to put an ISBN on an EPUB and then other people make that EPUB into other editions, those people in the middle can assign a unique ISBN to make that identifiable by the end user. But they do state that in the best practices that different versions like a PDF or an EPUB should have a different ISBN. But based on who your trading partners are, they may have already done that. So if you've released, say if Rosemary's released her PDF and her EPUB, her PDF may be floating around out there with a unique ISBN on it, but what she really cares about is the sales being reported to her in the language she gave out to her conversion house and to her trading partners. So that's all being addressed in that BISG document. So I urge you to check out their website and keep watch for that document to be coming out in the future. I just want to say that that was the right slide that we were showing for Wendy, so thank you. And here's a question for our speakers that says, can you recommend a metadata service that can help get data to everyone who needs it without having an on-staff IT person or an expensive title management package? Does anyone want to take that on?
Well, this is Rosemary. There's a number of outside digital asset distributors that can do that. I guess I would say that if you don't have a title management system, you at least need, I would think, some kind of database or mega Excel spreadsheet to be able to keep track of your metadata. unless you're publishing a really tiny amount of books. We're working, as I said, with Code Mantra, but I know that Ingram Digital and other vendors can do the same kind of thing in terms of taking an Excel spreadsheet that you supply and then sending out metadata to trading partners in Excel format, or as one of the other speakers noted, some people can't yet take Excel. Certainly some of the library vendors that we work with are not yet taking Excel. So, in fact, our digital asset distributor sends out an Excel sheet instead of Onyx.
Thank you. Another question, are you providing ebook metadata only to vendors who sell your ebooks or also to Bowker and Nielsen in the UK?
This is Rosemary. We send Bowker ebook updates like once or twice a year, not on a regular monthly basis, and we're not right now providing it to anyone in the UK.
Okay, I don't know if we lost Bob or Bob, if you have your phone muted, maybe you wanted
No, I'm here. That is true of Johns Hopkins as well. We're not sending e-book metadata to Nielsen. We find that, that it's enough to do what we're doing with them right now. And mostly the e-book metadata is going to the vendors of the e-books.
Okay, we should, Pat, we should probably wrap things up.
I can stay in the presentation manager and jot down answers to some of the other questions, and we can be in the chat room afterwards to help people as well.
Okay, that would be great. So on behalf of Book Business and the Publishing Business Conference and Expo, I want to especially thank our speakers, Pat, Bob, Kathy, and Rosemary. We're thrilled you could be here with us today and really appreciate you taking the time to share your insights on this topic. Obviously, there are tons of questions we didn't get to, but they will hopefully, some of the speakers will be able to hang out in the networking lounge if you want to head over there and see if you can chat with them. And thank you, our attendees, for attending the session and our event. And if you're interested in discussing anything you heard during the presentation, you can visit the networking lounge anytime and chat with other session attendees as well. And you can visit the information booth to fill out our show survey to let us know about your experience today. We really appreciate your input. And check out the agenda for the rest of the day. We have a number of great sessions lined up, both live and on-demand sessions that are available anytime throughout the day. And we encourage you to view as many as you can. And remember, if you can't watch them live, you can add them to your briefcase and view them at your convenience in the on-demand environment. I always have trouble with that. That on-demand environment thing. Anyway, have a great day, everyone, and thank you again for coming.